Welcome back here with the news at one. Search teams are still trying to find a tourist submersible that went missing during a dive to the wreck of the Titanic. Contact with the small sub was lost about an hour and 45 minutes into its dive to the wreck site on Sunday, about 600 kilometres off the coast of Newfoundland in Canada. As of yesterday afternoon, it was thought that crew members had 4 days' worth of oxygen left at most. British-Pakistani businessman Shahzada Dawood and his son Suleiman are two of the five on board. Another of those believed to be on the craft is British businessman and explorer Hamish Harding. Stockton Rush, chief executive of Oceangate, they're the firm behind the dive, is also widely reported to be on the vessel, as is French explorer Paul-Henri Nargileau. Television writer Mike Rice, who has travelled to see the Titanic on the submersible that has now gone missing, spoke to the BBC to describe his trip.
We're all aware of the dangers going into this, that this is not a lark. And, you know, you sign a waiver before you get on that mentions death 3 different times on page one. And you have to know that they're learning as they go along. You know, this isn't like a Coach Holiday or something. Things go wrong. In fact, I've taken 3 different dives with this company, one to the Titanic and 2 others. And you almost always lost communication. And, you know, you're at the mercy of weather and that kind of thing.
That's Mike Rice, who had previously travelled on the submersible that has now gone missing. We've been speaking to former British Navy nuclear power submarine Captain Ryan Ramsey about what might have happened.
Somewhere along the way, there's been either an electrical problem, a mechanical problem, and they've run into difficulties. And it strikes me that at the moment they haven't been able to recover from that.
Why is it so hard to find this vessel?
Well, it's really small. So if you imagine how long it took them to find the Titanic, you can imagine that even if you're looking for something that's between 8 and 10 metres in a depth of water of 3,000 odd metres, it is really, really difficult to find. I mean, if you think about MH370 in the Indian Ocean, they never found the bits of that. So you're looking for a needle in the haystack.
If it remains underwater, can it be found?
Well, that depends on the amount of technology you're going to use in order to look for it. So if you turn around and said it was somewhere around the Titanic and call it 100 metres around the Titanic, it would take days, if not months, to scour all that area to find out whether it was there or not. And you need specialist equipment to be able to go down that deep in order to survey.
So the best chance of it being found in a short space of time is if it comes to the surface of the water, is that right?
That is correct. So if it's on the surface, so say they've had a problem, they've managed to recover from it, and they're now on the surface, there is more chance that it will be found. And you see already that naval forces have been deploying aircraft in order to surveil the seas around that position in order to see if it's there.
What's your understanding of what this vessel is like, what it's like inside?
So it's a very, very small vessel, as all submersibles are. So limited space, cramped space for 5 people within that particular environment. There'll be some, there's lots of electronics, there'll be spaces there for the pilot to actually pilot the vessel itself. So, but it's a very, very contained environment, very, very limited.
How is it piloted? How is it operated?
So generally, it's not dissimilar to a submarine. So basically, as from submersible operations, in order to get it down to depth, they'll put an extra weight on it, which allows it not to use battery power in order to submerge. And then once it's reached the depth, they release that particular weight, which then allows them to go off and do that particular trip. And I can only imagine that that's somewhere between a 2 and a 6 hour trip in order to look around. And then, of course, it makes its way back up to the surface. But it's a bit like flying a plane, but underwater, effectively. It's got basically hydroplanes, which are like wings, effectively, that allow the maneuverability of the particular vessel.
And what contact does the pilot of the submarine have with the outside world?
Well, that's a really good question. So because it's not tethered by a particular line, it's difficult to understand what communications they have whilst underwater. So I suspect whilst on the water, they will have radio communications, but underwater, I'm not certain what those vessels have.
Ryan, have you any experience of anything like this happening before?
You could use the Kursk in 2000, which was in 200 metres of water, having the same thing, but never have I heard of something on this scale at that depth.
And most of the people who are on board this vessel will have had no experience of anything like this before.
Yes, correct. And that for me is, you know, when I think back to my time in the submarine service, is that when things go wrong, and they do go wrong, because these are really complex machines operating in an area that's less explored than space, it's the training that kicks in. Everybody is fully trained to deal with every particular emergency. And when things go wrong, they can't add any value. It's reliant on one person only, and that's the pilot. And whether the pilot's got sufficient training to be able to deal with that kind of emergency will have to be answered.
What's the best chance of it being found in time now?
So I'm a realist about all these things, and my thoughts are with the families who must be thinking about, you know, recovery and survival and getting their loved ones back. But the reality is if it's still underwater now, it's not the oxygen that's the killer, it's the carbon dioxide. So breathing out carbon dioxide, even if they've got another 48 hours of oxygen, if they don't have the ability to remove the carbon dioxide, then that becomes the factor that takes life.
That's former British Navy nuclear power submarine Captain Ryan Ramsay speaking to us a short time ago. Let's go live now to Newfoundland, where we're joined by reporter Ryan Cook with CBC. Ryan, thank you very much for taking our call this afternoon. Can you tell us what's the latest from where you are? Who's searching and where are they searching?
Yeah, so the search is taking place at the Titanic wreckage site, which is about 370 nautical miles southeast of where I'm sitting right now in St. John's. And we know that the search is being undertaken by the American Coast Guard, even though it is closer to Canadian waters. And right now, there are a number of commercial vessels in the area that are all pitching in and looking for any sign of this thing, as well as some aircraft from the American Air National Guard and the Polar Prince, which is a former Canadian Coast Guard vessel, which was contracted by OceanGate to tow the Titan out to the site.
Is it known exactly who's on board?
So we have confirmation on the identities of three people on board. The first would be Hamish Harding, who's a British billionaire, aviation executive, a pilot in his own right, and a adventure enthusiast. His company confirmed that he was on board. Then we have Shahzada and Suleiman Dawood, Pakistani nationals who we understand live in Surrey, in the UK, and then we have pretty good idea of the other two identities, one being OceanGate CEO Stockton Rush, who would be the pilot on the craft, and then the fifth being Paul-Henri Nargelet, who is actually part of the first expedition to ever visit the Titanic wreckage in 1987.
Ryan, is it known exactly how long searchers have to find the people on board?
So we know that they have 96 hours of life support capacity, meaning oxygen and other necessary supplies for being down that deep. We don't know when exactly that life support capacity would have kicked in, if it would have happened an hour and 45 minutes into the expedition when they first lost contact, or if they would have had to tap into that supply at some other point since then. So the best update that we had was from last evening. We heard from the American Coast Guard, who said at that point they had between 70 hours and 96 hours. So we're looking at an end coming sometime on Thursday, likely.
Ryan Cook, thank you very much for talking to us. That's Ryan Cook, CBC reporter, reporting live for us from Newfoundland in Canada this lunchtime.